I'd like to be special. I got two persons on my side there.
I have a question.
Jeff, you have an answer?
Biggest block, or anyone can answer. What do you think the biggest block is, if it's even possible to talk about it, to letting go of yourself? Because it feels so awesome when you do it.
Yeah. Right. Well, the biggest block to letting go of the self is the impersonal and involuntary adhesion that creates the self in the first place.
It's a funny question when you think about it.
Yeah.
It's like, who is letting go? Like, you know what I mean? How can the self let go of the self?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like really funny.
I like the comment because it feels so awesome when you do it. Like, that's a hook in itself. You want to get that.
Sadly,
I do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is.
Dang.
We'll get rid of the cell phone.
Yeah. Well.
There's your answer.
Oh, Waka, why don't you say so?
I zero right in on my broadcast.
Your present experience does not convey self. Self is imagined. So to want to get rid of self is too late, because there's already an unseen investment in experience as self that then wants to wiggle free of self. But since it's all been objectified, you can't ever wiggle free of that which is not actually an encumbrance. Yeah. So that's the obstacle. You know, it's the paradoxical nature of the genesis of self is the least common denominator has to be the most, right, challenging obstacle. Because anything that effuses after that is symptom only. So if we go tangling through all the symptoms, as in the content of my crappy life, then you could say that's just a reinforcement of the root hysteria, the root confusion. And so that can't help. I mean, you can go on a mini meditation retreat pretty much every day, but if you don't know who it is that's sitting on the cushion, all the inner peace in the world is not going to release you from that root dilemma.
Who it is that's sitting on the cushion?
Yeah.
Who is it that's sitting on the cushion?
That's the question. That's where, you know, that's where the, you could say the practice of self-inquiry, which is silly, right, is that's what's attracting your attention. Here's present experience. Without a thought, without an opinion, without insisting on objects, self, what self?
So the times that could be deemed associated, where you have the ability for time, I guess you're not under stress, but I mean, there's moments in time where it seems like, you know, what did I just do for like the last 2 hours?
Sure, yeah.
Where you just sort of are not aware that you're aware, like you just can't sort of search with me.
Yeah. Well, some, you know, your psychiatrist or therapist might call it dissociative, but your yoga teacher might say, wow.
Yeah. Okay.
Samadhi.
Okay. So there's times when you're not, like, aware that you're aware, or aware, or whatever. I mean, just point to it when you're, like, out of it, and you say, well, I just, you know, kind of, like, time seems to just...
Well, think of whenever you measure what we're referring to as the condition of aware, you're only doing so in fantasy. Because that is the movement, the spontaneous and expression and movement of objectification. Because right instantaneously you start thinking about where was I, what was I doing, why was I doing it, what's the outcome of what I just did, what was the quality of my attention or my awareness in the last 2 seconds, 5 minutes, right, 3 days, 30-something years. You see, and so that's the movement of measure, right? And the only way that you can indulge or engage what we call, you know, movement of thought as measure is through objectification. But here, as in right here, right now, not that there is a right here and right now, there's really just the miracle of attention. There's really just the miracle of availability. But the miracle of availability, faster than you can say Earl Grey in a thing. What's that called again?
French press.
Earl Grey in a French press. Faster than you can say Earl Grey in a French press, you're swamped by the appearance of objectification. And then you think, oh, I'm able to measure or assess the quality of my consciousness and where, quote, I've been the last some kind of measure of time. But that's just being imagined in place.
Because I had this weird thought recently, which isn't the first time, like, you know, sort of like pretending you're God or pretending you're this being that's like looking down on Earth.
Right? Sure.
And you just sort of see, like, people are like, you know, happy things, they're arguing things, you know,
yeah.
A little bomb goes over here.
Yeah, a little cluster bomb, yeah, lobs over the fence, right.
You know, you're looking at all this and you're going, that's really interesting. What the hell are they doing, you know?
Yeah.
There's an animal kind of running through the forest. And,
yep.
There's a cloud over here. You know, a storm over there, and
yeah.
They're like looking down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if you look from that perspective, it's kind of like all a little petty. You know, one of the other things in my litany of things I've tried, right, was letting our form stuff.
Sure.
And so, actually, Justin was reminded me of something. Old McDonald's. They would play, at some point in part of this whole thing, they would play Old McDonald to just say, to allude to the fact that it's people noises, just the animals.
Oh my God, you're
right. Oink, oink here, and it, yeah.
Oink there, here, oink there.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah. People are just.
Yes. Yeah.
We're all just
addicted,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's when we make it personal and take it to be about me and I that you lose any sense of that perspective.
So then I was thinking, well, like, what's the point? Like, why are you taking it? Where's the point or something?
Point of?
Yeah. Like, something that we can sort of achieve. You know what I mean? And then I thought, well, what about, like, feelings and love?
Yes.
Well, that's sort of just like the mom going on.
It is. Mm-hmm. Isn't it? Isn't it?
I mean, you don't necessarily want to.
I mean, your most ecstatic affection or your most ecstatic security and safety and warmth and love or sensual, you know, bliss is just like mom's going on. Isn't it? We tend to think that, you know, love and sentimentality and things like that, well, that's the high end, right, of call it, you know, human emotivity, human experience. But it's no different than anything that happens.
Yeah, I mean, we can't really be. Well, maybe we can. I don't know.
It's completely unreliable. I mean, ask anyone at the table or ask anyone in Doylestown. So how's your love going? How's your affection going? How's your blissful, you know, sensual experience going? It's like gone. Whatever it may have been, whatever peak experience I may have had, whatever affection I may have the privilege of feeling or having someone feel toward me, is what exactly? It's completely unreliable. It's completely arbitrary. It could turn into a, you know, an egregious divorce, and it, like, you know, that fast, and does. I mean, unless, of course, you know, you're the, you know, prince and queen or of England, you know, then it's, you know, it's totally reliable.
down there, but there's strange-looking things in our heads, you know?
Yeah. You see, nothing is reliable, including the myth of self. And so, as if this, whatever this is, let's say, compartmentalizes as the presumption of you as a durational being, then one thinks or imagines that there's a destination. This is not the destination. But by virtue of my mini meditation retreat or coming to Night Sky Flanga, whatever, that you know, something's going to come my way. My ship's going to come in. Right? And someone like Paul Hederman or whomever runs around and, you know, speaks in a lofty manner without a break for an hour and a half, you know, as an entertaining spiritual monologist, and we think, I'll have what he's having. So it's this reflex of becoming, this reflex of moving into or occupying your so-called future with less affliction or more affection, that is delusional. And you might notice that after some number of decades of trying to avoid affliction and trying to accrue affection is not fucking working out. Not in the way that one hopes. It keeps slipping away. Everything keeps slipping away. It just keeps slipping away. Why can't I find a steady state of love, safety, affection, and abundance?
If we did, we'd get discontent with it in a heartbeat.
You might. Everything slips away. Why is that? Because reality, if there were such a thing, is not what we think it is. So as long as we continue to invest in this bizarre anthropomorphization from the point of view of landing in a destination that ultimately satisfies, you are one lost puppy. But all of the churches and all of the meditation centers and all of the turnaround houses and everything else that you can spend good money on attempt to solicit you or encourage you in that process so that you can reach a so-called destination of blissful sanguinity. And that's just not the case.
By letting go of, or not letting go of, having some kind of realization or
yeah.
Like if you don't, like the old McDonald's pet, you know.
Right.
The next time I get upset about something, which could be in 5 minutes from now.
Yeah, it could be.
Or less.
Yeah, you're good at what you do.
Where?
I know.
Watch
your step. Yeah, really.
Yeah, really.
I wasn't singling you out. You're amongst other experts in the field of this can go south faster than you can say boo.
That was quick.
You seem to have less attachment to them, or at least that's just been my experience. You know, never mind. I just looked at Dave, and I'm sorry, Dave, but you just drilled on some. Like, just recently, I got into a big throttle or something, you know?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But in retrospect,
I mean, with Dave?
No, not directly.
You see how quickly a memory of one's there she goes. Really. Yeah. What you've got at the tip of your nose is the euphoric liquidation. That's what you have. This is a liquidating euphoria.
I'm gonna write that down. I love it.
Without clinging, this is a self-liquidating, self-transcendent euphoria. That's what it is. That there's clinging is not your fault, not really even your problem. But because clinging appears to screw things up, it might be worth investigating the geometry, the miracle of clinging, and see if one can't wiggle free of the influence of clinging. And return, not that you've ever left it, to your already divine actualization, which is this liquidating euphoria. But you see, when we approach a remedy for what ails us, we do that in an objective, meaning material, meaning acquisitive, meaning event and circumstance manner. Right? We want a remedy for affliction, but we want it to appear as a remedy, as a kind of intervention, as a medicine, as a feeling state. And that's what keeps us in the loop of not being able to release to liquidating euphoria on its terms. But once you turn the corner on, let's say, agreeing to some level of self-evaluation, which a mindfulness retreat is good for, right? Or hanging out at breakfast, or stubbing your toe, or acting out at a church meeting that you weren't invited to, are all, right, grist for the mill of your liberation. Everything is consequence-free. Let's look at the condition of the earth. I know. To that meeting, everyone invited themselves. That's right. Is this present moment a consequence of anything that happened prior to it? Is it? Wayne Lickerman will tell you that it's, you know, vast universal forces. Well, he's full of shit, and he knows it. But he writes that crap in his newsletter without giving it much thought and gets away with it because no one holds him accountable for it.
So it's not vast universal forces?
No, there are no vast universal forces.
What the hell is it?
I don't know. You see, we want to hold, because of materialist thinking, because of presuming that something is actually occurring and that it's occurring to me, we want to find out the culprit. Who the F is responsible? Well, it must be vast universal forces.
Or at least energy.
Or, yeah, or energy.
If it's something, we think we can negotiate.
That's just it. You see, you think this is something, and therefore it's the consequence of something perhaps else. Call it vast universal forces. But you'll notice that your present experience is also euphorically liquidating. Thought makes it appear as if there's continuity. But the experience you're having, like in this moment, is not the same experience you were having in the moment before this one. Were there a moment before this one? And sure as shit isn't the experience you're having now, now that I've finished saying what I thought was valuable to say, which was not. You see how you're streaming? Experience is streaming. It's never still. It never repeats. It's always absolutely brand new. And you could argue uncaused. And now, as you're like, oh, this is uncaused and it's always brand new, what do you have left but liquidating euphoria?
Thanks.
Thanks so much. But it turns out liquidating euphoria is just not enough, is it? It just won't do. I want it to be liquidating euphoria that I control, that I understand, that I know the genesis of, that I can turn the volume up and down, that I can use liquidating euphoria to remedy myself of my imaginary afflictions. So I always want to have some utility. And as long as you insist on some utility for what you imagine is your life, you drown out the bliss field of liquidating euphoria, and you return to the hallucination of I, me, mine. How fast? You can't measure it. That's how fast. It's faster than whatever Planck might have said about it.
Planck's constant.
Oh, well, you forget your plank. I know. Most people tend to forget their plank.
Not you, Jeff.
I like to keep plank in mind.
I remember it's plank.
Woohoo! Ah, so you see, your feeling tone is immaculate, profound, doesn't skip a beat. Your feeling tone is the bridge to liquidating euphoria. Your thinking mind, which is referential, well, that is a wormhole to hell. What do you want? Do you want a wormhole to hell, or do you want the wormhole to unafflictable, transcendent, self-liquidating euphoria? Check. I'll have what he's having. So the training, let's call it a training, right? Why not? This is a turnaround house, and all it costs you is the breakfast, and nobody walks away with a dime except the waitstaff. This is the turnaround house. Here it is. Fuck you, fuck me, fuck this. Ta-da, you've graduated. You get a certificate on the way out. Can you feel the urgency in oneself, in yourself, whatever that means, of insisting that this is about something?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can feel it, right? Oh, this must be about something. I swear it is. But it's not. And if it's not about anything, you are free to come and go as you please. But if it's about something, you are one miserable motherfucker for the long haul. And that's the good news. Because all there is good news. There is no bad news.
Plain?
Yes.
It's probably a little warm.
I was just saying, it's probably a little warm.
It feels fine.
I'll bring a couple down for you.
Okay. Regular coffee?
Regular.
Do you think our dear friends at Pebble Hill want to hear this message? This discussion?
Some of them.
Sure, that way they can ostracize me even more.
Oh, yeah.
You're in good company.
Dave, can I just go?
No. Okay. That's the right way to ask it.
They're really good. Good move. I thought it would be a little weird for breakfast, but it looks like it. They're really good.
Anyone else? More coffee? Yeah. Y'all good? All right. Enjoy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We can have a devastating conversation in a good way right here in a so-called public space under the nose of any passerby, and there is no purchase. It's like we could be sitting under the Maxwell Smart cone of silence. That's how curiously secret this is. Do it right in the midst of anyone. The so-called night sky flanga meets four times a week. Pretty much everyone at Pebble Hill or in the local community is aware of it somehow. Even the goobers over at the Bucks County, you know, Buddhist Sangha are aware of it, right? I don't see them pouring in.
Why should they?
Why should they?
Thank you.
Okay.
They're aware of its existence. They don't show.
They don't want to rock their boat.
Now, I'm an egomaniac, so I could say, well, I have a bad reputation, and everyone knows that I'm, you know, a jerk from hell. But it's not that. That's bullshit. They don't show because this is secret. Because if you have not been invited to get to the bottom of the miracle of your experience, you will not even realize there's a journey to take.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So hard to explain to people.
Yeah, as in impossible.
Yeah.
Right.
Why would you try? Well, it's what you're doing.
Usually, the things that we do and the places that we go and the relations we encounter and the mystery schools that we participate in, we really want these things to be life-enhancing. Mm-hmm. Nobody goes to a thing that is liquidating of the myth of self.
Life obliterating. I can't speak for anybody else, but it's occurred to me, I better stop this Mike Skysonga shit. It's not doing me any good.
No, it's not good for you.
And things seem to be getting... Sometimes they seem hard. So maybe that's...
Yeah. It's impossible to... We think that it's possible to self-assess, self-accuse, and then steer in an optimal direction.
Yeah.
It's not. That's a myth.
Aren't you coming back from the... back to the... What Wayne Lincoln said, unfathomable force of the universe or something, is driving this whole thing. Because the thought is, if we're not steering, then what the hell is?
Well, obviously, no one.
Yeah, objectifying it. It has to be objectified in some way.
Yeah.
Right.
Somebody has to be steering.
Yeah.
Something has to be doing something.
If we really need an answer to that question, how about the God of your faith? He, she, it.
Emma.
Whether it's a turtle.
Who's girl?
The great turtle. Or everyone's under the influence of the aphrodisiac of the sacred rhinoceros horn.
Oh,
and that's why this is the way it is.
I guess that why this is the way it is doesn't make a shit bit of difference if you're truly just open to what it is.
Yeah, that's right.
And open or not open, that doesn't make a shit bit of difference.
No.
Well, we keep saying it's dreaming, and if you could just compare it all to your dreams, yeah, I mean, there's no cause, no effect, they come out of nowhere. They disappear, they liquidate immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Next time you run into a proton, you can ask it, hey, what's driving your decision tree? You know, the next time you run into a photon, see if you can slow it down fast enough and say, hey, can I interview you just for a moment? One question, please. What the hell is driving you?
You need one of those self-aware photons or photons.
Yeah. Well, that turns out to be you. I mean, part of the wonder of liquidating euphoria is the cessation of why, how, who, when, what.
It begins to seem absurd.
Clearly absurd. Your feeling tone is the primacy of, let's say, your interface or this interfacing with itself. The feeling tone of experience is the primacy of whatever this is or isn't interfacing with itself. Thought appears in that feeling tone. Everything that thought suggests turns out to be a big fat lie. But as long as this feeling tone hitches a ride on thought, then there's space-time and person. Space-time and person is a long way of saying suffering. So the yoga of radiant presence, someone coined that phrase, or whether you call it Dzogchen or Kashmiri Shaivism or, you know, Gnostic schools of Christianity, or doesn't really matter. All of the training focuses on the same thing, which is the recognition of your feeling tone as the primacy. That means you decouple from thought as convincing you of a universe.
Well, thought doesn't go away, but it ceases to be the...
Neither does seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling. Yeah. But if you become fascinated, first there has to be some recognition of feeling tone itself. In let's say in the Dzogchen tradition, they might refer to that as a Rigpa, basic space. Consciousness unadulterated, consciousness prior to anthropomorphization, consciousness without the imaginary boundaries of time-space, that's Rigpa, that's your feeling tone. So, who? Bernie something. I met him at the drugstore, yeah.
Tibetan Buddhism, I think.
Well, they all say it. They just use different vocabulary, right? Mm-hmm. Kabbalah says it.
And they have the word rig in there?
Well, in the Kabbalah, you know, maybe you could say that same revelation as the Tetragrammaton.
Can I ask this?
Right?
Okay. Good choice. Although I'm such a wimp when it comes to spice, I'm like...
Is it hot?
It's not like, you know, I just think sour cream would
be good. Sour cream would be awesome.
Just to, I like to even out that spice.
So whoever's playing the sorrowful role of facilitator or teacher, who's ever playing that sorrowful role, the job is feeling tone. Ah, feeling tone. You'll notice that attention and awareness are nothing other than feeling tone. And there's a, call it a unicity or a marriage that occurs, which is consciousness of feeling tone is none other than feeling tone. It's not two. That's why you would refer to feeling tone as the primacy of experience itself. Once you identify with the imaginary objects that are appearing in experience, you're somebody. And that happens too fast to beat it. You can't beat it. You just have to see it occurring in your own experience. How feeling tone, which is non-objective and non-subjective, faster than you can say boo, can appear to you as objects and subjects. That's a different approach than, let's say, trying to remedy how you felt about things in the past and how you hope you might be able to catch yourself before you go into a psychic bender in the future.
Much different.
Much different, yeah.
Your Beth said something that might be from the season. She said, oh, I my book had already been carried. She was kind of, and I don't know if she was, yeah, like, so I've had that experience before, but it always feels like something has already occurred.
Like you. You have already occurred. Each moment, you can say there's that curious paradox of the recognition that you've already occurred. In other words, as you appear to yourself as a person in a set of circumstances that might be looking for some form of attraction or aversion, you're too late. That's what Carl Renz likes to point out. You're too late. Feeling tone appears as or is the presence of or the recognition of basic space or total spaciousness. Non-objective spaciousness. Get used to it.
You started with the question, what gets in the way of perceiving this? And I would suggest that it's like, if you really move into non-objective spaciousness, you really profoundly have to give up any sense of control. Like, you're just sinking into whatever is here, and that's scary as shit.
Okay.
You have to objectify it, even know what the word control means.
Well, you see how creative and how quickly this anthropomorphizes into the creature that could possibly be frightened by the loss of control. And then that hypnotic suggestion appears, and it's like, well, that must be true.
And that's all just in your head, because there's no issues here. Like, there's no fear here. There's no, oh, my God, I have to control everything. It feels pretty easy. It's a little breakfast morning now. Right here is just pretty easy.
The entirety of you is occurring impersonally, spontaneously, free from any control.
Sour cream
is good.
He just got on the table next day.
On that note, I think I will.
You can put sour cream on anything.
That's the real deal.
You're on.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen.
Bye, dude.
Give John Walshens our regards. Invite him to Night Sky Sangha. We want to chalk up more experience. We want to add stuff to the portfolio of self. When we get restless, nervous, or frightened, if something might interfere with my ability to add more experience to the portfolio of self. You could say we're not done, right? We're still engaging with the world in a manner of accumulating more novelty. We're junkies, and that's not a bad thing. Underneath substance abuse or other forms of, you know, psychiatric addiction, the junkie that we are is primarily radiance, wild radiance. That's the real junkie. And why shouldn't it be? A crazy-haired, transcendent, self-luminous liquidation. Can't get enough of itself. It's the ultimate junkie. So all the substances that we may engage in are really, really tiny. Really tiny symptoms of the primacy of that this is like, more. I must have more of myself. Unfortunately, you do. You always have more of yourself. But if we don't recognize it, then we presume our experience to be one of malnourishment. And then so we go in search of mini substances.
Mini-me's.
Yeah. We're like a cluster bomb of mini-me's.
Who's the big me?
The god of your choice. There is no.
It's you.
Or you could say you are. It depends on what you mean by that. Here's whatever this is. Why is it so difficult for us to simply melt completely in the generosity and abundance of what this is? Instead, we insist on separation, identification, individuation, and then the pursuit of addictive pleasure. Racking up experience to add to the portfolio of me. And who's doing it? You? No. This is.
Sometimes, you know, I'm sure this is just yet another... Sometimes I look at different people and I say, you know, well, I look at myself and say this, like, we're all given certain tools and we all have certain options.
Sure.
That sort of are going to be the most helpful in attaining and losing ourselves.
Yeah.
The false self, if you will. Because, you know, if it wasn't such consequences to addiction, hell, I'd be high all the time.
I'm with you.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Right?
I'm with you, yeah. Let's go.
If it wasn't the consequences to
Yeah, so self-realization could be characterized as being high all the time without consequences.
Even, you know, even cancer, when I'm sort of up against this possibility of short-term living.
Short-term living, yeah.
You need to let go of
a lot of
excess baggage. You can't afford to
Right.
I'm not saying I've been completely successful in that, but I'm better than I was.
No question about it. You were a real asshole before that happened. Just a setup. Don't take me seriously.
What a great compliment.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling.
He said were.
You want a whole or a half or what?
Yeah, you know any of those little taters here?
Look at this. You're making out like a bandit.
Do you want my taters?
I have a whole bunch here.
I don't know if I need more.
Well, they're here, can you?
I'm like, I eat a lot.
Dave's like the dog.
What?
out of control.
Whatever I might accuse you of, I was 100 times worse. Yeah, good. Yeah, I know. You take a risk. See where someone might go with it. I was a what? Oh, fuck you.
Be happy about it.
Yeah, really.
Even how I use the pedal, it's like the world turns around on the air.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
But it got to be like a way that affects the way. Maybe it is. But, you know, there again, you look at, you know, like if I look at my son or if I look at, you know, somebody that's fairly close to that, it seems as though, although things that seem to be, like, but that could be just my, you know, I'm like looking to grab something.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you are.
Seems
we
like
all do.
Saying,
you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see, you want to place yourself in some context and make whatever progress we can make on being high all the time without detrimental consequence. So the root movement is...
Do I need to explain addiction?
Yeah. Yeah, you sure it is. I mean, all addiction, as in life itself, is gloriously hell-bent on its own ultimate fulfillingness. And if I can't get fulfillingness through my own mind, I'm going to alter the fucker. Cheers. Thank you. Beautiful. Yes, beautiful. Yes, that's right. Absolutely, that's right. And if we're lucky, we run the course through the alcohol and the drugs and the sex or whatever it is. And we're like, yeah, really, I would like to go to a sex addiction next, if only I could, right?
If not just to pick up men.
Yeah. Someone's locked in your basement?
Somewhere around the same time, there was also a sex addicts meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it seemed to have a lot of guys in it, and apparently, his guys were more or less like the participants.
Or
if you were more.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I made the joke once that we shouldn't grow up well with the boys.
It'll go over better with us, I'm sure.
I said, maybe AA and these guys should have a social.
That's a lovely idea.
I'm just trying to get community. Yeah. I'm just trying to build things.
Right. We would all like to consummate our sobriety.
All you have to do is look at the smoke room.
They need to see those precautions.
Yeah, I just sour cream. Like, I'm kind of a baby with the spice.
Yeah, so it kills it like a little bit.
If you get it again, I'll remember that. So
yeah,
oh, we can't tell you. But the sour cream is lighting up on the spice.
No, but I can get the sour cream to smooth it, yeah. The problem is with the tacos, they do a little like the chipotle marinade.
Yeah.
So some of it burns off, but I guess it probably soaks in. For me, the hotter the better.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people love
it. I don't even sweat it. So are you done? I'll take that.
I put jalapenos in my sour cream.
There you go. Yes. See, I lived in the desert for 13 years in Tucson, so it's hot, hotter and hotter.
I do,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
The only problem we make are the underlying premises of existence.
Yeah.
I mean, what everyone accepts as a given, which is why it's so hard to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what's completely wrong.
Yep. That's right. The primary premises that something is happening is completely wrong.
Yeah.
But everyone is convinced that something is happening. What do you want me to take out? Your sex?
Yeah, a couple of comments I've made. Please.
Tell me which ones.
If anybody makes it through the recording to this point, they'll be
one of us.
Yeah.
There's no risk. There's no risk in nothing.
Euphoric liquidation, remember?
What's that?
Euphoric liquidation.
That's the message today.
Dan Goodwin.
You're confronted from moment to moment with the fact of indeterminacy, ambiguity, and liquidation. Think the thought you thought a moment ago again. Good luck. You won't even remember it. And how vaporous are we? Pretty fucking vaporous. You see, if you really try to nail this down in situ, you can see that you can't nail it down. Because it's just streaming in. Your emotion, your feeling, your thinking, your physical movements, the cacophony of consciousness in its entirety is like, it's just coming at you. So the only way that we can presume to know what we think we know is through fantasy.
And we spin that out at an amazing pace.
Yes, and fantasy spins at an amazing pace.
It's like we can't deal with this just on the raw, unexplained level.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to pile on top of it. Oh, well, this is really what's going on, and this is why I feel sad today, and this is why it's going to be a good day. Like,
yeah,
we have to pile the story
on. We want our
on.
Thoughts to explain the feeling tones
yeah.
all the time.
Yeah.
And it's the feeling tones that actually create the images that make up our life.
Yeah. Feeling tone is all this is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, relevance, continuity, is imposed on feeling tone by what we refer to as thought, or belief in thought, identification with thought. And that's madness. It's total madness. It is profoundly malnourishing, unsatisfactory. Dukkha with a capital D. But it's.
You sound like dukkha.
Yeah, dukkha is, unsatisfactoriness.
Pardon?
Mm-hmm. Dukkha is the revelation that present experience could be, not insisted upon, but could be profoundly unsatisfactory. And that's because of anicca and anatta, which is nothing less, impermanence and not self. You see, but we're trying to find lasting satisfaction in a reality field that has no permanence, is impermanent, has nothing to do with self, and any identification or attachment to the contrary is dukkha, is unsatisfactoriness. From a human perspective, you have to become absolutely insane to take this on. But from this perspective, to remain human is total insanity.
Either way, you're screwed.
You're screwed either way. You're going down either way. Yeah.
I was looking at this chart this morning, and I'm like, I wonder what all this means. And I think it pretty much means you're fucked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fucked, you're fucked, you're fucked.
Yeah. It's a good mantra. Yeah.
Om is 1.2 equals 3, you're fucked.
Om is short for, oh my god, I'm fucked. Om, oh my god, I'm fucked. Om, oh my god, I'm fucked.
humming.
I get it, Lise. You're in your hair cave.
I know, I just started feeling.
Oh, it's a very safe place. Excuse me, I have to go into my hair cave.
Today I'm moving. Tomorrow I'm staying.
Oh, yeah, let's record that.
Oh, shoot.
Sorry, Terry. Didn't mean to blow your cover.
Yeah, that was okey-doke. Ever since I've been a child, it's been like, you know.
We love you. You are an open book.
He's very well trained now to not be around people who talk too much. You know, like she just
doesn't. I'm loving you with silence and non-reply. So your present experience could be very interesting if you dropped the reflex of going in search of.
You mean we're really only here for the food?
I hope the food's good if that's the case. Going in search of is the reflex of mind or consciousness, not that there are such things, infiltrating the moment as durable character.
My imagination tells me, you know, in that bird's eye view of something or God's eye
yes.
sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, okay, well then, what does this all mean if you're looking at it from, like, you know, a little bomb going off, the people just, well, that, all that, right?
Yes.
So what happens when somebody dies? Oh, there's the ground, they're having a little, like, these bunch of people kind of moving around, and then there's that person in the ground.
Right.
And, whatever ritual, whatever. But then I wondered if, like, what did it look like if they had somebody was on the lake? Like, what would they look like in the bird's eye view?
Nice.
My imagination tells me that it's like they just turned the light, like they turned the street light.
Uh huh. Yeah.
Think that's sheer imagination. It's just
could be spot on. Who knows? Liquidating euphoria is a fancy way of saying pure light. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Isn't this the entirety of radiant presence? Isn't this it?
Do you ever see those, like, pictures or something, like, where you look at pictures?
And they become things, like three-dimensional shifts?
And if there's just all these little spots of light. And maybe
oh, yeah.
The wonder field that's appearing to you now, that is happy to appear to you without, thank you, limitation, turns out to be exactly what this is. This is the wonder field of boundary-free revelation. And not revelation as psychiatric, not as an aha, not as an insight, but revelation of the entirety of its radiant nature, shining in its own face.
Brian said it.
All gone.
Like a squirrel.
You see how the feeling tone becomes more noticeable or effulgent or attractive, immersive, when the habit of selfing or thought streaming relaxes of its own accord. Radiance becomes more attentive to its own radiant nature as all of the attention given to the thought stream of its own accord simply relaxes.
That of its own accord piece is kind of key. You're free not to work this.
You're absolutely free to leave this alone. Yeah. Right, if we think if I take my hands off the steering wheel or I don't effort, then what I was hoping I was after is going to be elude me. Because I have to be acting as a sincere, legitimate, and earnest agent to foment, to participate in my own realization. Not happening.
It seems if anything is served by trying too hard, it's just the eventual realization that trying doesn't
work. Well, the myth of trying, the vector of trying, right, the anthropomorphization that trying suggests is revealed as liquidating euphoria. There's nothing here that stands apart from liquidating euphoria,
yeah.
Including the trying, including the identification, including the suffering, including the addictions, whether successful or lethal. It's a kind of a big embrace. You might have been looking for a glory hole.
Like, I went down there and she tried to put me in the corner. Someone went down there and tried to put me in the corner.
Nobody puts baby in the corner.
Nobody puts baby in the corner.
I'm out of here. How dare she?
Why do you want to pee in public?
I like it when three girls were carrying out in one of the room bathrooms over there, and then they all piled out at once.
Well, there was two and one and one and another.
Oh, I thought it was all three.
Because the one came down and said, you two didn't go on the same bathroom. She walked in there.
Did that happen this morning?
Yeah.
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 You were here.
Carrying out and making a row.
Oh, okay.
You were dreaming of stuff going on at the table while you were sitting here.
You missed the good stuff.
I entered into an alternate universe. That happens so often.
What a relief that your presence does not insist upon or demand any relevancy, any utility. What keeps us seeking is this subterfuge or insistence on relevancy, on utility, on outcome, on destination, explanation, who's in charge, why is this the way that it is. You see?
Everything you just said is the components of a job.
Oh, yeah.
You know, everything you just said, you need outcomes, you need relevance, you need a goal, you need, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's no surprise that the social structure, including the employment structure, reflects the insanity of, you know, human mind.
It yields it.
Yeah, and so it repeats, right?
Yeah.
It reinforces itself.
Despite the fact that we could produce everything we could possibly need for basic, you know, living and enjoyment, and everybody could be fed, we can't just live with that. It's got to be insanity and, you know, pending financial doom and environmental disaster when everybody that's here could be well taken care of. It's possible.
Yes. Yeah, you could. With the present technology and the potential of future so-called technologies, the planet could for sure sustain the present population in a big kumbaya way.
Yeah, all the advances in farming and advances in lots of areas to make lives easier. They haven't made it easier. We're turning the
you have to ask the 1/10 of the 1% why this unabated accumulation of wealth and power is doing for them. It's like the accumulation of what we would call material abundance is such a profound reflection of no abundance at all.
it's a reflection of total inner poverty.
Yes, total inner poverty is why someone would strive to take control of material abundance. Uh-huh. And so, you know, if you place narcissistic damaged, malnourished creatures in charge of central banks, whether on the human scale there'll be a constructive revolution that might turn in the direction of what we might call Gaia sustainability, jury's out.
I was kind of laughing about that, thinking like, oh yeah, you guys saying you should give workshops how to retire early without anything. I'm like, there's no interest. It's the same as Night Sky Sangha.
There's no interest. I know.
They don't want to not build their house. They want to build the fucking house. They want to, they don't, you know what I mean? They're not interested.
Once again, it's the acceptance of the givens as the grounds of your existence.
There you go. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, now people just accept materiality as
the goal. You go to work and like retire. Like there's only like a certain couple ways things could happen.
So inwardly, we could say the consciousness has incarcerated itself by presuming agency, and so all of the structures that emit from that consciousness are incarcerating.
Yeah, it's a jail, and then a bigger jail, and then another jail.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's just, it's like nested jails. Sorry?
The opposite side of that coin, though, is the idea, the people that are jealous of that.
Yes.
I'm jealous of the food, though.
Right.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
So they act out that.
Yes.
It's all the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's people that, live wherever they live, in a small house or a place, and they're very contented.
Yes.
They don't really see
Yeah. Yeah, Paul Hederman's pretty happy, and he sells T-shirts.
And paints, but he doesn't do ceiling.
He doesn't paint anymore. No, he failed at that.
No.
Oh, he's into failure? I'm so with him.
Yeah, right. I liked your reflections last time on being kind of uncomfortable just hanging out when there was a lot of people next door doing a lot of stuff. It's like that's the reflection that's ingrained in our consciousness that you should be doing, moving. Like I've always been really uncomfortable not like being in there working when somebody else is working.
Yeah.
And that's that like bred into you from the time you're very little.
You don't want anyone. You don't want anyone to notice just how irrelevant you are. Yeah, that would be frightening.
what I strive for now has always been my greatest fear that, you know, that I didn't exist. You know, it's like,
yeah,
I never got enough attention.
Right.
Now I was jealous of everyone who did. And now it's like, okay, I want that. I don't exist.
Yeah, turning the corner on what you thought your worst ailment was.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was just you, Francine. It was me. For almost 2 years there at work, I learned to meditate and sleep in my little room and do basically nothing because they didn't give me enough to do. And I tried, but, and I had a little bit to do, but I did do that. I didn't think I did. I thought it was just you. It's not true. It was me. I'm busy now. I got my chance to do nothing.
You'll have plenty of chances.
You keep making stuff up, you know. It's like one minute you're doing nothing, and another minute you're really busy, and you know, and then you're like wishing you weren't doing something when you're really busy, and then you're custom building a house and complaining about how much money you're spending, but you chose to custom build the house because you want the house, but you don't, you know. It's like, oh my God, you can't win.
Oh my God, I'm fucked.
Yeah, off the wheel. That's how you win.
Well, it's more like, yeah, that's not. It's not really that relevant. You just see how slippery it is.
You recognize how irrelevant you really are.
It could be a lot of fun.
Well, from a human perspective.
Yeah, definitely.
That becomes our biggest fun hobby. That's pretty sad.
Whatever is appearing in your mind and your experience and your consciousness and your directives and your failure and your successes is appearing in the basic space of liquidating euphoria. Any association with symptom is what is referred to as clinging. So Buddhism, to its credit, is fairly articulate about the nature of clinging and the consequence of clinging. But the clinging is remarkably subtle. Like, this could be a cup that my, you know, great-grandmother had, and so I'm going to cling to it from a certain kind of sentimentality. But the clinging that we're talking about is really the clinging of the immediacy of your present experience. It's not object-driven. The real clinging is that this is something. Mm-hmm. And that I have to occupy this liquidating euphoria in a relevant utilitarian manner with a certain kind of spiritual destination in mind. But no, cling not, Pakwan.
I still can't get over that Buddhism just got a compliment from you.
I know, me too. That I'm going to delete.
Speak, depending on what part of Asia you're in, it's Buddha's birthday, so I think that was the only tomorrow.
Yeah, that's all he gets.
I kind of think that Jeff has a deep love of Buddhism, which is why he's so hard on
What we call mind is just a reference to the reflex of clinging. There is no mind because all that's appearing is just left the building. Just left the building. I cannot actually occupy my present experience objectively or from the vantage point of subject or object because it's gone again. And so clinging is, oh no, I'm still here. this is still here, I'm still here, the circumstances, the space, the people, the building, the accoutrements of it all are still here. No, they're not. So then you can see the reflex of clinging is not, the problem is not objects, not clinging to objects, not even clinging to subject. Again, it's the quicker than quick draw McGraw suggestion that this is something. The how subtle is the clinging, right? If this is not anything, you can't cling.
And that's in every second, like, you know, the whole thing is ridiculous, that whole, like, I don't know, like, I just was thinking of that, oh, like, how to retire with nothing. It's like, in any second, you have that option. It's presented in every second. It's not, like, it's without the objectification of it.
Yes.
It really is just...
Yeah.
That,
it's like the yogi that wanders through the cemetery from time to time to see if anyone's left a food offering that he or she can have for lunch. Talk about naked in the world. That's even stranger than bumming behind Bob's Big Boy, dumpster diving for the leftovers. Wandering the cemetery to see if maybe somebody left a food offering. That's how free you are.
That would just be, in the yogic world, that would be pretty anti-Semitic or something. Go and take a food offering, right?
But you're just using a metaphor, right? That it's not about being poor.
Well, you too.
Yeah, that was an ad for Nice Guy Sandra.
Yeah, that was a good ad. Are you going places? How about wandering the cemetery looking for food offerings? Talk about success.
People do really seem to take it that way. Like it's a then that's like a way to be. Like, oh, okay, then I'll be like poor and just wander around and like it looks a certain way outside of yourself.
People do that all the time. That's the way they take it.
But what you're saying is kind of like that's how things are always operating underlyingly. All the time, and you're just not seeing it, so you think you're like a person with a plan and an objective, and you're running around.
Right.
So it's just that free flow is what more what you're talking about. Like, oh, look, food, you know, oh, water. It's not like without the whole, like, well, if I don't do this, that, and the other, I'll probably starve to death, so I should get going, or whatever. I don't know. That's just not exactly the.
Although I had a therapist one time say to me, you can't give up something you never had. So, like, I guess because it was pretty difficult. So, in other words, like, and even in that yoga non-book, they say the same thing, you know, start from saying it's like his voice kicked him out because he's not paying bills or he's an asshole. And, you know, he shows up, like, at this thing, and one of the masters says to him, go back home, get the respect back to your family, get through, and then come talk to me, and like start acting right and help me.
Absolutely.
You know, like a couple people have guilt for that shit. You know,
yes.
Okay, I'm harping now, but the same thing. Like, we're going to give up all this stuff.
Doesn't work. Doesn't work. Right. Won't work. Well, it's a feigned transcendence. If I'm participating in a compensatory activity to try to remedy a suffering that I don't actually understand
via objects,
I'm not likely to be all that successful and then just be a burden on others.
Or conversely, to give away things like money to charity or like, yeah. one idea of that could be.
This process, if it is a process, does place a certain demand upon you. The demand that it places upon you is a sufficient quality of sobriety to meaningfully, profoundly, disturbingly look into the nature of your own consciousness. If you are addicted or consumed by compensatory activity, your intelligence is not yet sufficient.
And addictions are usually our favorite compensatory activity.
Of course
run,
they are.
Run.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah, you demand, this demands, again, you know, as a process, which it's not, but, I mean, we're speaking poetically, because there's no correctness here, right? But speaking poetically, if this is insisting upon or inviting you into a certain quality of sobriety, so that you can really feel the entirety of samsara and nirvana, then you can't be running amok with a million compensatory ailments or addictive indulgences that cloud, right? Cloud your affection.
Yeah. I asked Peter that pretty point blank at one point.
Yeah.
You know, assuming this is sort of a, depending on your perception of sort of what this really is, like open and really, really just allow yourself to perceive what this really is. Wouldn't it make sense that you set up your vessel so it can really bring it in more efficiently?
Like, yeah.
Have a pretty healthy body, a clear mind that's not, you know, muddled by alcohol or drugs.
Sure.
He said, not really.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
He basically said, not really. You know, and I know he drinks and plenty of people and, you know.
What did you say?
He basically said, no, it doesn't matter.
Well, you can't put rules in.
Do you really have a pretty efficiently working sort of physical system without interference of drugs and alcohol or other addictions and things going on? I asked him point blank, doesn't that make sense for being able to quote practice being
sure.
in the radio presence?
This is too wild to be tamed by an ideal approach.
Yeah. And I could see how with certain personalities it would make sense to loosen up enough just to have it. Or like that might be the
sure.
the key. With other
yeah.
people it's probably not such a good idea.
Yeah.
But then.
Yeah. I mean, awake is all this is. Where's the preparation? Where's the proprietary formula? Dubow! You know, today!
So many Christians hate the story, don't like the story of the prodigal son. They think it seems so unfair. That's the one story that proves there can be a God. God would have to be that way. Otherwise, he wouldn't be.
Liquidating euphoria loves to tell stories.
Yeah.